Hey folks, what's the crack? Welcome to Depression Cure, the show where we discuss the latest tools, ancient practices, and cutting-edge research to help you take back control of your emotional well-being. My name's Hugh James. I'm a writer and a podcaster from Ireland who has been in recovery from addiction and depression over the last 15 years.
Hey everyone, I'm Steve Ilardi, and I'm a psychologist, a professor, a researcher, podcaster, MBA analyst, amateur musician, very bad one, but I love it.
So, I like these new little kind of like bits you keep adding in, and it's different every time. You're just a polymath. It's fun.
I've always loved the line. I've never quite fully understood it. I believe it's one of our great American poets, Walt Whitman, who said, "I contain multitudes." Which, not going to lie, the first time I read it, I was like, are we talking dissociative identity, multiple? No, but anyway.
Did you ever read his thing? What's it called? Leaves of Grass? Something? It's like that, like, it's like very, very long.
Very, very long is a literature review that I could apply to about half the stuff I've read. Anything by Thomas Hardy.
Hey, love the poetry. I would reduce it by 70% though. You're like, who is this guy from Ireland criticizing one of our greats?
There was a thing, as I'm sure you know, and by the way, folks, I promise we will not get into a long digression on 19th century literature, but there was a thing where in the 19th century it became a fad to pay writers by the word.
Oh, yeah. I can get behind that, actually. Yeah.
Can you imagine? Well, I was just thinking, what if they paid podcasters by the word?
Especially unedited stuff, we would be absolutely up there.
It would be pretty legendary. Okay, well, so we are delighted that you're joining us today. Today, we're going to do something we promised in our sort of upgrade relaunch over the summer. Now that we're heading into autumn, heading into winter, at least for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, we are going once a month, we're going to have a Q&A episode. And so this is our first post-summer Q&A episode. We're excited about it. We got a great question for you. And I think Hugh's got it queued up. You just want to play it?
Yeah, let's do it. New podcast, new me. Here we go.
Hey, Steve and Hugh. First of all, I absolutely love the podcast. I'm really hoping that we get more Patreon supporters to keep it going. My question is, how can leaders best support their teams when it comes to their mental health, specifically within the context of a remote working environment?
Yeah, I love that question. I also love the shout out to the podcast and our patron community.
Dude, we love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, there's a premise in the question, which I just wanted to highlight, put a pin in, which is the premise that leaders care about the mental health and well-being of their employees, of the, you know, that this is something that employers are concerned with. And I would say increasingly, this really is true. Once upon a time, if you went back 20, 30, 40 years, it was a little bit of a harsher era where employers were just like, hey, man, just show up, get your work done. What you do on your own time, that's on you. As long as you can do the work, we don't really care about work-life balance. We don't care about your mental health, as long as it's adequate to the job. And now employers are saying, hey, if our employees are not at something approximating physical health, mental health, maybe even peak performance, it's going to bleed over into their work. And so I love this evolution. I love this insight that employers are getting.
Yeah, and the skeptic in me says, you know, well, it's because mental health issues are rising to such a degree that actually it's affecting their bottom line. But I'm okay with it. I'm like, whatever helps people move more towards a place of well-being, let's go for it.
Absolutely. So I just have to tell you, as a mental health professional, I'm excited about this epiphany on the part of many employers. But now let's break down the question. How can we optimize mental health? If we have responsibility over people who report to us, or we're part of a team, and we're thinking about, you know, how can we promote the well-being of the people who are with us? Well, I got to lead with, and we're not going to focus on this too much because the question really asks primarily about remote work, which is an increasing reality for so many people. Obviously, it went into overdrive, orders of magnitude increase with the pandemic, but it's not going away. And organizational, industrial employment researchers are very clear about the fact that there will now always be a sizable subset of our workforce that is primarily remote. Having said that, I got to give a shout out to the potential psychological therapeutic value of face-to-face interaction with our team, okay? The best research that we have already over the past 2.5 years of the pandemic is optimal mental health outcomes, optimal productivity, optimal employee morale occurs in hybrid work settings. For the average employee, being able to have, if the employer can structure it so that employees get optimal control over their schedule, over when they're at home, when they're in the office, and here's the key, so that when they go into the office, it's not just, oh, come into this magical space and somehow that's going to be a great thing, even though your reality of your day is you're going to be sitting there on endless hours of Zoom calls in your office. It's like, hello, that is not helping anybody.
Yeah, the therapeutic effects you don't get by osmosis. You know, it's not just by like sitting in this sacred space of the office on the office desk. Like you're going to find this amazing amount of well-being. You got to use your time well when you're there, don't you?
Absolutely. And there is something, I've experienced this. I've mentioned this on a podcast before. As a university professor, I wear a lot of different hats, I have a lot of different roles, but one of the ones that I really treasure is meeting face-to-face with students in the classroom. And for a year and a half, we couldn't do it. For a year and a half, we were shut down, it was all remote. So I don't know, like literally a year ago, we were back face-to-face and the electricity in the room, I don't want to overly romanticize it, but it was kind of magical. It was like, we were all so freaking happy to be back in person in that space. And I mean, one student kind of mentioned like it's a little bit of the difference between listening to a CD or something or being there live for the performance where you're in it, you're immersed. You don't have any distractions. If you're at a concert, you probably don't have your phone out, or if you do, you're not texting, you might be recording something, but like you're in it. And if you can make that part of your work experience when you're in person, what are you doing? Hopefully you're not on your screen the whole time. You're face to face for the things that really can be valuable, one-on-one, in groups, whatever. That's the best of both worlds. And increasingly, I think people who have more and more control over their workflow and employers who want to give the best possible setup for their employees are going to do something like that. Even if they're mostly remote, Hugh, in our pre-show, I know you mentioned this idea of a like people that are in a primarily remote work setting might still have like a quarterly retreat. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, you know, like I know companies and organizations that have, you know, say 50 plus people around the world, literally in every single time zone imaginable. So hybrid is just out the window for them, unless it's maybe like this one time a year, massive week long retreat, or maybe a quarterly offsite or something like that. And I think, you know, it's amazing to, in terms of relationship building, to have that face to face, that human interaction, and it can just build on those digital relationships that you have. And so I think it's really important that you find a way to kind of bridge that gap as much as possible.
Absolutely.
So we actually, in some ways, like you and I don't necessarily practice what we preach. Whoa, big claim, big clickbait moment. We're yet to meet each other in person.
Yeah.
So you and I operate in, you know, the specific context of this question. We are a fully remote team. We do everything remotely. And so I actually would love just to take like a couple of minutes to share some of our best practices, some of our learnings that we've kind of just developed through 7 months of experimentation. We're obviously a multi-time zone team. Both of us have lots of different things on our plates. I think actually like there's some broader applications here for some of the things that we've developed. And because we have self-care as like a pillar of our partnership, obviously, we do want to practice what we preach in terms of having optimal well-being and strong, robust mental health. So a couple of things that we found that work really well for us is the most important thing for me is this idea of having a buffer and having a margin. So we have been pretty adamant from the beginning of this project that we want to bake in margin into what we do. And so obviously the podcast world is very specific in how you do that. You just have lots of episodes in the bag. But the reason why we want that is so that when life happens, when tragedy occurs, which it is always going to happen, we have a little bit of breathing space to move things around, to take a week off when we need to, instead of having to show up and potentially pushing ourselves into a place of burnout or, you know, running on fumes and ultimately delivering a poor product as well. So there's been multiple times across our journey where we've been really, really grateful for our buffer. I had a depressive episode, I don't know, a few months ago, and like it was amazing to have the buffer in place because we were able to take, you know, those two or three recording sessions that we had, and I could just take that time off. If we didn't have a buffer in place, we wouldn't have been able to do that. And I know that we've done the same for you as well a few times.
I think it speaks to a bigger point, which is that when we are in a workflow situation where we feel like we have no margin for error, no grace, no ability, if life throws us a curveball, which as Hugh mentioned, you know, inevitably it will at some point, if we don't feel like we have the grace, the space to tell our team, like, hey, I mean, I'll give myself as an example. I mentioned it in our last episode. I experienced a very painful death of a close family member last month, and I'm doing well given the pain of that loss, but there's a normal grieving process, and it was a beautiful thing that I could allow myself basically like a week off just to be with family. I mean, honestly, more than anything, in some ways, to be a support to people in my family who were struggling more than I was, which then added to my sense of like, I really need time away from work to deal with this. Well, that's only possible if during the times when everything is rolling, we're building in a little bit of that margin, building in that buffer. So Hugh, can I just give a call back to something you said a minute ago? I know this, I'm going a little bit off script here, but Hugh mentioned that we've never met face to face, but I think this is actually a beautiful example of if we can leverage video chat one-on-one with dedicated time where it's uninterrupted, where we just give ourselves a recognition. Here's my feeling, and I'm going to be honest, we've never talked about this, but my own ballpark sort of vibe about this is it feels to me like it takes maybe 25% or so longer to build a connection through video chat one-on-one. I mean that like, you know, if I'm getting to know a student during office hours, or advising, mentoring a graduate student, or working with a colleague. And, you know, and I have a lot of relationships now this far into the pandemic all over the world with people that I've only ever met ever through video chat.
I do feel like I have met you. Like if you showed up at my door after recording this, part of me wouldn't feel that surprised because it almost feels just like, oh yeah, it's Steve. Like I see Steve all the time. Like I hang out with Steve. Steve's a close friend of mine. Like da 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 da. Although, like, the logic brain would be like, what the hell are you doing here?
You know what? It's going to happen one of these days. I think I'm just going to show up in Belfast. It'll be epic. I mean, there are these little weird things. Hey, folks, have you ever had the experience where you meet somebody IRL that you've only known by video? And you're like, oh, you're way taller or way shorter. In my case, if anybody cares, I'm 5'10". You could give that to us in centimeters, maybe.
Yeah, well, I told you, I thought you were like 6'6 or something, you know?
Oh, and dude.
You told me that, and I was like, oh, wow, well, the dreams really, the illusion are shattered now, Steve, thanks.
Well, yeah, if it helps you, in my dreams, I often am tall enough to be able to...
Okay, so another thing that we find this worked really well for us is making the time zones work for us. So, you know, at the start, and this was all me, like, this was me leading this, this had nothing to do with Steve. I was always of the mindset where it's like, I like to get my work done on that day, finished within the context of that work day. So when we first started working together, I was like, look, it's great. I'm going to adopt a US work schedule on the days that Steve and I work together. And so, you know, for my time, it would mean we log on, say, 3 p.m. We would often in the early days record pretty intense sessions. You know, like we would do sometimes 3-hour recordings and split the episodes and all that sort of stuff. I would then have dinner with my family and then I would go back to work and I would edit and I would finish that episode. And that all, you know, naturally led to quite late nights. And I just found that that didn't take me too long to figure out this is not going to work for me.
And we're talking about like 3 hours past your normal bedtime, right? I mean, you'd be up till 1 a.m. or something.
Yeah, and I was like, it's great. I can just sleep in more the next day. And actually, I just have learned that consistency of rhythm with it, all that sort of stuff, when you work, when you eat, when you sleep. It's just so important. So I had to get over, I had to let go of that desire to have everything in a neat, tidy little box. And so I now have like a split day approach with my work with Steve where I record in the afternoons and then I actually work and do the editing and the production and all that sort of stuff in the mornings before we record. So it's a bit kind of scattered, but it's way better than what we were doing with the time zones. And even, you know, Steve, we've both made compromises. You've got up earlier to do this. I've stayed on later than my normal work schedule. And so we found a way to meet in the middle and make that work for us.
Absolutely. If I could just highlight something that I think is an even broader critical point in what Hugh just raised, which is, how about this? If your top priority in your life is your work productivity, then everything else will be expendable, including your quality sleep, including your rhythm and your schedule. And unfortunately, a lot of people give lip service to work-life balance. They say, yeah, absolutely, work-life balance. I'm all about that. And then they find, well, like Hugh, the optimal thing to do from a workflow perspective, from a productivity perspective, is for me to stay up till 1 a.m., 3 hours past my normal bedtime. But if your top priority is your well-being and your work-life balance, then you're going to be fine with letting go and saying, hey, this may not be the 100% most optimal thing, but I can do a 90% compromise that will allow me still to thrive. And I just think that's a beautiful example of that.
So the last thing I'll share from us before we kind of move into the more corporate stuff is having some audio meetings sprinkled into the mix. And so what that allows us to do is basically we spend a lot of time in the chair here, you know, now with the video locked to the screen, effectively doing long Zoom calls that are recorded. And, you know, we all know about Zoom fatigue. We know how real it is. I know my eyes start to glaze over and I get really, really tired when I do video as opposed to audio if it's for an extended period of time. And so we try to minimize that high performance time. And one of the ways we do that is by hopping on the audio before we go on the video. So we were experimenting with it today. I think we had a 30 to 45 minute kind of like preamble chat. How was your week? Okay, let's talk about this episode. Before getting in the chair and locking into the high energy, high output mode. And what was I doing? I was walking around the garden. It was sunny. I was getting a drink of water. I was stretching. I was setting up. We've also started to incorporate breaks in our recording sessions where we'll sometimes have like a half an hour in between each one, which is just so beneficial because it minimizes that like high intensity interval output for your brain, you know? And we've had meetings before where I've been out for a walk. You've been sitting outside in your front garden getting some morning sunlight. And I just think that audio meetings are a really, really useful thing to sprinkle throughout the work schedule. Obviously, it doesn't work all the time and you want to have some meetings where, you know, everyone's together and the camera's on. But if something can be communicated while out for a walk and, you know, I often have virtual walk and talks with people. And I think that I've seen some organizations incorporate that really well into the kind of workflow. And it switches it up, gets us out of the chair, gets us moving, gets us in the sun, gets that heart rate up. And I think even in terms of like an intimacy or a relationship, it feels kind of nice to be walking alongside and talking to somebody. And I mean, I'm an audio guy, but there's times where I've been having just amazing conversations and it's really felt like someone's walking along beside me, but maybe I'm just an outlier in that regard.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I completely agree. I think just to circle back to something Hugh said, if you had told most of us before the pandemic had its onset that, you know, 2.5 years in, the thought of doing a, let's just say, 2-hour stretch of your day on a video conference would fill you with dread, would fill you with a sense of like, oh, please, dear God, not that, not another Zoom meeting. I think we would have been surprised at the level of fatigue, at the level of just depletion. And I think Hugh put it very, very well, that there's something about the experience. You know, there's an upside, obviously. There's a reason why we keep having Zoom meetings. But there's something about the experience of having to give not only your auditory attention, but your visual attention and your physiological attention to this interaction, where it's like you got to be, your butt's in the chair, your face has to be centered in the frame. God forbid the other thing, which is that you have to actually somehow see your own image of yourself in the frame.
Well, that's a really, really useful thing. If you can hide yourself, I think it really curves that depletion, you know, because you're not so obsessed with the way your shoulders are sitting or like, you know, your body language and all that's important. But like, it just, I think it's a distraction. It's too much output that you don't have in real life unless you're sitting in front of a mirror, which is so bizarre.
Yeah, exactly. So the beauty of being able to continue with a phone conversation, an audio only conversation, where now your body is free to get up and move, as you said, and also your visual attention is free. You know, if you're really focused on a high level meeting with somebody, you can look over your notes, you can pull something up on the screen, you can, and it's not rude. Whereas if you're in the middle of a video Zoom chat, you know, you may not want, I mean, unless you have share screen going or something, there's a place for it. But anyway, the point is simply, how about this? Try to normalize on your team, in your work culture, normalize the idea that not everything has to be a video, full, all sensory channels video chat, that it's absolutely fine to get up and walk around. That in fact, it's not just weird, but it's actually kind of cool to be able to go outside. And I'll take it even one step further. I have, over the last couple of years, started practicing what I preach in terms of the value of the great outdoors, the therapeutic restorative value of being outside. I have been holding some of my classes outside. I've been holding my office hours outside, and students are loving it. I've been, you know, holding meetings with colleagues outside when I can. They're not always excited about that, but you know, if they're more junior colleagues,
damn depression professor trying to force his therapeutic lifestyle upon me.
Oh, how dare he? It's hilarious. But you know, I don't know. I get really excited about the idea that work and the relationships we build through work can actually be leveraged to enhance our well-being, to give us a feeling of connection, of belonging,
absolutely,
and of encouragement to live our best lives, you know, with everything that means.
Yeah. And, you know, if people are on video, they'll see, like, I'm recording this episode outside. And, like, I've really, really tried to start working outside a lot more, because even just, like, from an eye perspective, like, I'm sitting talking to you right now. I'm not looking at the screen. I'm looking at a tree that's maybe like 20 meters away. And, you know, even that thing, like from an eye muscle perspective, it just gives me like that sense of like, oh, like a little bit of space, a little bit of distance, not just like something that's like 30 centimeters in front of me or whatever. You know, we're going to move in and talk about incentives and stuff and what companies can do. But like, how funny would it be if, like, you know, a company really bought into the idea of like, we're going to have meetings outside remotely. And like, they buy everybody like a really warm jacket. Like, that was like part of the remote working toolkit. Yeah. It's like, you know, we're going to send you out one of those like fisherman dungarees where you basically, it's impossible for you to get cold. Because now we're moving into the winter. I'm like, dude, I'm going to need to invest in like something substantial to keep me warm here. But I also like the fact that it forces me to get up and move around to stay warm. And I'll shoot some hoops sometimes, or I'll do a couple of like kettlebell swings or pull-ups or something just to get the blood rate going. But again, that's not going to be for everybody.
Not for everybody, but you know, for those who genuinely care about thinking outside the box, and how can we not just give lip service in our company and our team, not just lip service to self-care, not just lip service to work-life balance, but we're going to model it. And then I try to do that with my graduate students and with my undergrads. It's like, I've had several of them comment to me, like, Steve, you don't just talk the talk, you walk the walk. You really genuinely make self-care and work-life balance a priority. That's huge for some of them to see it modeled that way. But I'll take it one step further. We have now, I think, the most cutting-edge employers that are actually incentivizing employee wellness, like actually trying to send a meta communication, in other words, high-level communication to their employees, like, we genuinely care about your well-being so much that we're going to give you incentives. Like what? Well, how about free stuff? Cool, free stuff. Like what? Well, I'm
like
wearing maybe even cooler than a new pen or a mug or, you know, a little pin you can put on your lapel. Not that I'm salty about the 25-year pin that I got from my uni. That was my 25-year.
Oh, wow. Forget the Rolex, man. The pin's what it's all about.
It was a very lovely lapel pin. But actually, no, they sent me a ball cap, too. A uni ball cap.
Oh,
so
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It has a lovely, actually a beautiful Jayhawk on it. All right. So I'm wearing, for the handful of you who are actually watching this on YouTube, I'm wearing a really lovely biometric tracking device called an Aura, O-U-R-A, Aura Ring.
Just say real quick, it's actually the small handful of you who are supporting the podcast on Patreon. Now the video feed is exclusively for people support the show. Yeah. So big up. If you're watching this, you're a legend, is what we're trying to say.
Oh, yeah. And we cherish, we really genuinely cherish, actually, we cherish our entire audience, but we're so grateful for those who are supporting us financially to make this possible. Okay. So, you know, this Oura Ring, it's extraordinary. It's got 7 different biometric sensors. It's very lightweight. It's made out of titanium. And it gives me feedback every single day on not only my sleep quantity, but the quality. Gives me feedback on my level of restorative rejuvenation overnight. How's my, you know, overall well-being, my respiration? Am I having any periods overnight where my breathing is, you know? I mean, it's actually flagged for me when I was getting too congested to the point where my pulse ox, my oxygenation of blood was dropping a bit overnight. And I was like, oh, I need to take maybe a decongestant to... Obviously, it tracks all the easy stuff like your steps, your activity level, your intensity. So what's the point? There are employers who are giving their employees, you know, something fancy like this or something fancy like an Apple Watch or a Garmin or other wearables that can then be leveraged. And it's really remarkable. I mean, it can be life-changing. You know, there's an old saying in the business world, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. If you're not measuring...
A Druckerism, I think it's referred to as.
It's probably a Druckerism, yeah. But if you're not measuring your well-being in very concrete, objective ways, it's going to make it much, much harder to figure out. I mean, one of the things, I think I've mentioned this on a pod before, and I shared this with a colleague of mine who is a superstar, and we hope to have, I hope she'll share this story when we have her on. She's going to join us, I think, in November. But I shared with her that when I started tracking all my metrics, that I discovered a single glass of alcohol. By the way, listeners, you're not going to want to hear this, so I apologize in advance. When I have a single glass, this really irritated me, but it was really useful information. A single glass of wine. Hugh, a single glass of red wine. Okay, let's be honest. A single shot of tequila to sip on. My metrics would go to hell.
Oh, man.
Like, it would show
you've just,
up.
You've just, like, unsold Oura Ring for millions of people. They're like, dude, ignorance is bliss. I don't want to know.
Well, so I mentioned it to this colleague of mine in passing who had made the comment to me, DM, back channel, direct message on Twitter. You know, she'd been through something and she had gotten an Oura Ring and her biometrics were not where she wanted. And I had mentioned, you know, she was just asking, like, what moves the needle for you with this metric called HRV, heart rate variability. We'll have a whole episode on it at some point. And I had mentioned the thing about alcohol. And she's like, oh, that's interesting. And then she did the experiment. And she was like, damn, you're right.
Oh,
like,
it makes a... Don't you hate it whenever science makes you become a teetotaler?
You know, and listen, I want to be very, very, very clear for our audience. I am not saying you need to give up your glass of wine, your shot of tequila, your beer, whatever. Your mileage may vary. I mean, one of the mantras for our longtime listeners, you know, one of the big mantras of the show is there is no one size fits all advice. There are going to be those of you whose bodies metabolize alcohol very efficiently. My guess is, based on all the published literature, that the younger you are, the more you can consume alcohol with relative impunity physiologically to a point. I mean, I don't mean, you know, get like getting drunk, but as we get older, our bodies don't process alcohol as efficiently. My colleague and I are about the same age. And so we're advanced enough. We're, you know, but anyway, the point is.
So, you know, if you work for a company that's tracking your alcohol intake on a micro level, it's probably a cult. So that's not what we're talking about.
No, we're talking about that at all.
There are businesses out there that will actually give you a financial incentive to, say, hit like a certain step goal, maybe to hit like a certain number of hours of sleep goal. I mean, I would love to see businesses kind of like, I don't know how you would do this, but like time of exercise spent above a certain heart rate would be really cool based on your age because of your research.
It could be done. Yeah. And you could also have, and by the way, I'm not aware of too many available trackers yet, but it's coming, where you would also have a built-in light meter, a lux meter.
Oh my goodness. Should we invent the depression cure ring? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm kind of, yeah, I'm thinking it. Because there have been some amazing research studies.
Dude, the 6 steps, that would be awesome.
Where they give people a little bracelet that has a lux meter in it. and they track their overall exposure. You know, we've talked about the fact that outdoor sunlight is like orders of magnitude, hundreds of times brighter than indoor lighting, even a brightly lit indoor room. And what they find is that if you are getting a lot more outdoor light exposure during the day, your quantity of sleep that night increases, but even more importantly, the quality of sleep, and particularly that deep restorative slow wave sleep, where most of the best replenishment happens to the brain overnight. That's the key thing that you absolutely must have overnight. And just getting outside more, actually, you can see it reflected instantly that night.
I'm just going to shunt this in here really quick. Again, what if a company's remote working toolkit, along with the polar bear jacket, also came with a therapeutic light box? You know, and I know that there are other, you know, and for those of you who have just jumped into this episode, you know, there are light boxes you can buy that can deliver, say, up to 10,000 lux, which is, it's not as good as being outside, but it's pretty bright and it will stimulate.
Yeah, it's about like the intensity of outdoor light in the shade about a half hour after sunrise on a clear day.
Yeah, so it's awesome. And, you know, I'm not going to mention any names or go into any details, but I do know that there are kind of some experimental products on the market that are emerging. So I'm not saying go and buy these, where they're having artificial lighting designed to be in a home office or in a corporate world that will kind of like get brighter and darker as the day goes on, to try and not substitute outdoor lighting, but at least simulate it for the time you have to be inside. So I think there's some interesting things with light that companies could look into for their employees.
Absolutely. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, I've done a little bit of consulting with a local health insurance brokerage, an international company. They consult with thousands of companies for their employee healthcare and so forth. And they have employers that are providing monetary incentives. In fact, my employer, my state university, provides monetary incentives in the form of, like, you know, money contributed to a health savings account or discounts on health insurance or just bonuses even. Not my employer doesn't give bonuses, but
the bonus you get is the joy you see on your students' faces, you know.
Do I sound like
your management right now?
It's frightening how much you can mimic them. So anyway, as team leaders, you know, I would say in general, it's always easier to motivate people with carrot rather than stick. And so there's a lot of incentive that we can do, but also just the social influence that we have by virtue of saying, hey, this is important to our team. Let's support each other. Let me model for you as best I can. Let me share with you out of a sense of vulnerability. If I'm struggling with something, if I'm losing motivation for workouts, or I'm eating some, oh, here's one. I found that if I eat anything within 2 to 3 hours of bedtime, that it actually interrupts my sleep. So, you know, but that takes discipline, right? To say, all right, the last 3 hours of my night, I'm having zero.
Also intake. Knowledge, you know, the knowledge that I assume something like an Oura Ring gave you, you know?
Yes, exactly right. But that's still a temptation. There are times when, for example, if I have overdone it in a workout, like I've been playing tennis lately with a colleague who's like 25 years younger than I am. And I'm out there running my ass off on the tennis court. And sometimes my tendonitis will flare up just a little bit and I'll take a little Advil. But I can't take that on an, you shouldn't take Advil on an empty stomach. I'm not giving medical advice, but read the side of the bottle. If I don't think of it until an hour before bedtime, it's like, oh, okay. Well, if I want to take the Advil, then I got to put something on. So those are things that you can share with your team and say, hey, you know, I've been kind of struggling with this thing. Sometimes just having people who are there in your corner, who care, who listen, just the empathy, the understanding, and then, you know, hopefully the accountability. Soft accountability, you know, not with a big stick, but just with encouragement.
And I think, you know, we're still in the midst of, you know, what people are kind of referring to as the great resignation, where, you know, companies are just hemorrhaging staff left, right, and center. It's harder to hire people than ever before. People are looking for higher wages. They want more benefits. They want more incentives. From a business perspective, this is a huge challenge. People are like, what the heck are we going to do? And it's interesting how maybe something like, I'm going to make up a number here, okay, maybe an extra like $250 a month to pay for somebody's gym membership, to pay for somebody's therapy, to pay for somebody's whatever they need, I don't know, healthy meals delivered to their door for Monday to Friday, could actually save you massive, massive, massive amount of money in the long term. Like, yeah. I have friends who work in recruitment, and the amount of money recruiters make is ridiculous. You know, they're taking percentages of people's annual salaries. And so the cost that a business spends on losing somebody, it's exponential in terms of what you could do actually invest in your employees. It will result in happier staff. It will result in, you know, people probably staying around longer, and your output will also be better for better. Like, back to what we, the kind of capitalistic framework we talked about at the start. It's like, it's in businesses' best interests to see their employees thrive. And I think there's amazing kind of financial incentives as a business owner to start implementing some of those things too.
I love that. Yeah. And just to build on that really quickly. So there's something about our shared experience as human beings, as a human species. Our ancestors lived, as you know, for hundreds of thousands of years in very close-knit social groups, 30 to 50, maybe 100 people, where every single member of the clan was highly valued. Everybody brought something of importance to the team. And I think that workplace cultures, even if they're fully remote or if they're in person, doesn't matter, workplace cultures that give their employees a very strong communication and that live this idea of every single one of you is genuinely an important part of this team. No matter what your role happens to be, it all matters. And you matter and you're valuable. So I did a training workshop with a big addiction treatment and recovery center a few months ago. And it was like a 2.5 day event. And one of the things that I thought was so beautiful is it was primarily aimed at their providers, their therapists, their psychiatrists, their social workers. They invited everyone. They invited their receptionists. They invited their clerical workers. They invited the people who did insurance billing. So think about what the symbolism of that is, what it communicates to them. And then their CEO and their founder, both at different times, looked at them and said, you know, I didn't script this, but they looked at them and said, every single one of you, I mean, they had an intern there. I think it was a new employee or something. It was somebody, you know, very, very low in the hierarchy. Like, you're the first contact that somebody would have. And, you know, when you smiled at that person who came in today and greeted them warmly, and, you know, people come in sometimes and they're disoriented. The people that we deal with in our day-to-day life, a lot of them are struggling. And no matter what, we can have the most menial, what seemingly by some people's standards, the most menial, low-level position. But if we're putting our whole self into it while we're there, if we're really doing it to the best of our ability, we matter. And the employers who remind, not just remind those employees, but remind everybody on the team, like, hey, we all are part of this tribe. We're all part of this clan. Yeah. Man, I looked around the room and I was like, I know why they're not having the great resignation.
Yeah.
They weren't. Their employee retention was so high. And people came up to me after the whole thing and they were sharing. I was like, what is it about this place? You know, it was not the salaries. You know, I mean, people don't go into mental health care to make big bucks. They go in because it's really, really rewarding work. And people just looked me in the eye and there's like, there's a feeling of belonging here. And I want to tell you, employers, team leaders, bosses, whatever energy and time you spend cultivating that feeling of belonging and value, being valued for your staff, that is going to be absolutely worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely. It reminds me of that like apocryphal story. I mean, who knows if it's actually true? Like, a journalist went into NASA during the space race and like interviewed one of the janitors. And it's like, what do you do here? And he turned around and he said something just like, oh, I'm part of the team that's going to put the first man on the moon. And I, you know, I love that. Like, there is something about that shared sense of purpose and belonging and vision even. I think, you know, it's so important that leaders kind of cast that. But two more practical things I want to share, and then we'll kind of look at landing the plane. First one is kind of like a bit of an inverse approach to a strategy and a tool that managers have been using in the digital age for a long time, and that is actually to use time tracking software. So before, you know, the alarm bells start ringing and all the employees like grab their pitchforks and start marching over here to, you know, literally throw me off my podcast throne, this is not something that I think in this context should be shared with management. This is actually something for the employees, in the same way Steve was talking about with the Oura Ring, just to bring a level of awareness and data to how they spend their time professionally. We all know that distractions are like off the charts. We all know that there's that element of deep work that we know when we're in it, we're like, yes, I'm actually doing my job. I'm actually generating value. I'm actually doing the hard bit that leads to something beneficial, as opposed to getting slogged down in the admin and the shallow work and, you know, just spinning wheels. And I've been using a great tool, no financial connection to it, called Rescue Time. And it's really nice because it actually sends me every single week how many hours I clocked in on the screen, which is pretty much the number of hours that I worked. It breaks down my time, how long of that was spent in focus mode, how long was that spent in communication mode, and how much of that was spent in distraction mode. And I think that in and of itself is really, really helpful. And it's helped me. I've made some really clear decisions based on that data of, okay, I'm going to block off periods of time to make sure that I'm doing my deep work, or I'm going to try and maybe limit the number of times that I open up a communication channel. And it's like, you would love it in terms of the nitty gritty detail. It's like, you had 24 switches to communication during your focus session. I was like, whoa, you know, and it's like, this is, you opened up a communication channel like 50 times this week. And I'm like, wow, so interesting. And again, that sort of data helps you to take clear decisions. The off the back of that, you know, the way like businesses, like I do it for my own business and I'm a one man band. You know, the idea of like a weekly meeting, like a weekly check-in where you go over like, you know, the most important things, your KPIs, your blah, 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 blahs. What I've started to do over the last 6 months is part of that meeting, just to set aside between 5 and 10 minutes for like a weekly mental health check-in.
Wow.
And so I think, can you imagine a world like if we Martin Luther King for a second, like, you know, I dream a dream where like businesses all around the world as part of their weekly meeting will give employees that space to run through a checklist. And my checklist is, it's just me copying your work. You know, it's the depression cure. It's the 6 steps. It's the, did I hit my 3 workouts this week where my heart rate was over, you know, a certain amount for 35 minutes? Did I get 8 hours of sleep? Did I, you know, other things that I have on that list is, did I hit at least 100 grams of protein every single day? And that is so helpful just to have that little bit of space. There's some open-ended questions. For me, the 3 questions I have is, what was my relationship with screens like this week? What was my relationship with food like this week? And what was my relationship with my core inner circle like this week? And there's no guilt or shame attached to it, but just by the sheer awareness of, am I doing this? Am I not doing this? It changes the way I live my life for the next few days. And I think that employers who really value mental health and people's well-being, to give them that space, okay, you know, we bought Oura Rings for everybody as part of our weekly meeting. Review that data now and see if there's any changes you'd like to make in the next 5 minutes. Something simple like that, I think, could have a massive domino effect that would radically change the way people live and work, both professionally and personally.
Love it.
Sometimes I laugh at myself whenever I accidentally give like a JFK ending there. I felt like that was like a very political, like.
No, I didn't take it that way. I feel like, you know, in the current moment that we inhabit in the world, I feel like we've done a pretty good job of avoiding political landmines and just trying to stay very accessible.
Yeah.
To people. I mean, why? Because we're trying to stay laser focused on well-being, the things that we all have control over. Now, you know, part of things that we may feel we want to take more control over is our involvement in political causes locally, in our communities, and more nationally, more globally. That stuff really gets me energized. But even that, I feel like the things we talk about on Depression Cure can give us wisdom, can give us guidance in terms of how to keep things in balance, how to recognize even when our political passions might be turning psychologically toxic, you know? And that would be a topic for
dude, I would love to go there with you. Well, you know, there's a nice kind of like somewhere segue into like workplace politics as well, and how actually, you know, if you can relieve the psychological burden of all of that for people, and you can prioritize togetherness and unity and dealing with conflict, you're actually gonna make people's lives so much easier and allow you to do the thing that you set out to do, whatever that business is. So look, I've got nothing else. I'm done. Anything, a closing remark from you?
You know what? This has been really fun. I really appreciate the question. I don't know that the questioner gave us his name.
No name. He was a lone wanderer. He was a dark knight, a Batman figure.
Dear anonymous Dark Knight, we love the question. As you can tell, we could talk probably another couple hours on the topic at least. We'll circle back around to it at some point because I think there's a lot to unpack. Thanks everyone for joining us for another, hopefully, informative, hopefully stimulating episode. Hugh, as always, it's a blast to hang out with you, man. Appreciate all your insights today, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Dude, loved it. Thank you so much once again to all of our Patreon community. You can support the show over at patreon.com, and it's /depressioncure. So we have that set up now. There's like a bit of a redirect from our old link to that one, but let's be honest, the easiest way to do it is to check the description of this episode. You can click on the link there, you'll find it. And Q&A's going forward will be for patrons only, so thank you so much for all of you who are supporting that. And if you do have a question for us, there's a little bit of tension to encourage you on that way. It's, if you have the means to do so, it's the price of, what do we always say, a hipster coffee, like a super cool, like
a craft beer.
Yeah, that's what it is,
a glass of wine. I gotta say, and you're probably about to say it, but look, if you can afford $1, £1 a month, we know there are people that are really facing financial hardship, either temporary or more chronically. We never want money to be the rate limiting factor for your ability to connect with us and access this content. So, you know, just let us know. If you're struggling, we will meet you wherever you are. We want you to be able to partner with us if the show matters to you at whatever level.
Especially since, now this is I'm going to be very careful what I say here. Especially since we may be building out and developing something for patrons quite soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, a little teaser. That's
actually
good.
Potentially around the area of this weekly check-in as well. So that's all I'm going to drop there for now. Steve's been working hard on a whole bunch of really cool exclusive patron content, and there's a little added bonus that we would like to develop and build out for that community as well. But that's all I can say.
Teaser.
The lawyers won't let me say anything more, you know.
I love it. Yeah. Back at the home office. They're scrambling around, the whole team.
Shut you off. Shut him off. He's saying too much. Awesome. Thanks again, guys. And I'll catch you again next time.
Be well, everyone.